Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and this is a new season of 3 Yards Per Carry. This is our 7th season. Sam, did it feel like 7 years that we've been doing this?
It was like 70.
Chris, were you surprised when I told you this is our 7th season? 7 years doing this?
You know, I think I expressed this last time. Like, it seems like a shorter time we've been doing the podcast and a longer time that we've been doing the Discord. I don't know how that works out, but.
Right? Well, yeah.
Maybe it's because we have to put away people saying that Michael Penix has got a weak arm every day.
I like you going back and forth over Peter King. We'll talk about Peter King a little bit too here in this first half.
I mean, that guy's a good dude, but come on.
Yeah, I like Vin D, but Jesus Christ.
Peter King is the GOAT, right?
Yeah, he's the best general NFL writer I've ever. I can't remember one better.
I feel genuinely fundamentally sad that he's retired. Like,
yeah, it feels like there's something missing. There's going to be something missing from Monday mornings, you know?
Yeah, and he's probably the same for both of you, but a really integral part of my NFL story, my NFL journey. Mm-hmm. Like, as important as the Armed Forces Radio was when I was growing up, as important as, you know, I mean, it's just the Monday morning before I start work. That's what you do, right? You read his column, and you know, I get up extra early on a Monday morning just so I can read the column before work and read it with my cup of tea and soak it all in from the games the night before. And you get excited when he talks about your team and the nuggets over the years. And like, even today, the very last proper one, the little nugget about Valdez Scantling, you know, being the guy that called the fourth down play, and Mahomes went to Andy Reid and said, Marquez says we should run this, and Reid called it. And that only came from a phone call that Peter had with Patrick Mahomes on Monday. And you just think that you just don't get that.
And he also had that rundown with Mike McDaniel with that play against Carolina.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting. And it was a good insight into the way Mike McDaniel thinks about things, you know?
I was genuinely more excited to meet Peter King than I probably was for anything. And he was really, like everybody's saying today about how great he really is, that guy. He's really nice. I thought he looked old in Frankfurt, I have to say. I thought he looked like a 67-year-old man in Frankfurt. I don't mean that in a disparaging way. He just looked like he was ready, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I wish him all the best, but I think it's very selfish of him to quit.
Yeah,
what a guy.
But don't worry, you got Ben Solak to tide you over.
Yeah, cosmic.
You know, so every Monday now you get to read Ben Solak instead.
I'd really like somebody like Jenny Vrentas or somebody like, you know, a really good NFL writer that I really like to take over that column, but I can't read Albert Breer every Monday, and I'm not reading Ben Solak, and you know. But yeah.
Yeah. Right. Peter King, it was every Monday. Like, I remember every single Monday. The first thing I did, I got my coffee on an early Monday morning, and I read that. I read his Monday morning quarterback, you know, and then later turned into what did he call it when NBC bought it? They called it the Monday morning quarterback, or what the hell did they call it?
Football Morning in America?
Yeah, that's what they call it.
Football Morning in America, that's right.
Yeah, that's what they call it. Football Morning in America. I wonder who the hell's going to write that one. I know Albert Breer is taking over the old column.
Yeah.
But, well, as always, this show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Use promo code 5, FIVE. You deposit $100, you get $100. Now, this is key. This is for our listeners outside of the state of Florida, because they are currently in a legal battle with the Seminoles. And if you know how that works, Seminoles get their way in this state all the time. Not 1% of the time, not 99% of the time, 100% of the time. So if you're a member of Prize Picks outside of the state, you could continue playing past Thursday. If you're a member of Prize Picks inside of this state, start looking for your fantasy entertainment or gambling entertainment elsewhere. And as always, Better Edge. They're still here. They're still here in the state of Florida, and they can't be pushed out because they're peer-to-peer. So you can go to betteredge.com/5reasons, the number 5 reasons. You get $20 just for signing up. So Hard Rock can't get rid of them. All right. We kind of knew that Emmanuel Ogba would be cut, because how the hell else are we going to start cutting some of the salary to get out and be compliant under the cap? And we kind of expected that Xavien Howard would also be sacrificed and be made a June 1st designation. So Miami should be flush with cash on June 2nd, which could help them maybe sign somebody like Connor Williams, who Drew Rosenhaus made some very interesting comments about Connor Williams being a late signee. He also made some comments today to Joe Rose, which were interesting in and of itself, when he said, every single client of mine on the Dolphins will have work on their contract. He has 12 on the team. So Jesus. I guess that, so yeah, that's a lot of stuff. I don't know why Drew Rosenhaus is not one to just say, you know, just throw bullshit at the wall. Okay. Like, usually when he says something, there's a purpose behind it. So
did he mean also the ones that, you know, aren't on the team, free agents?
Yeah, because he has a couple. He has Robert Jones. Robert Jones is restricted. He has Duke Riley. Connor Williams is a free agent. I think he has Van Ginkle too.
Yes, I believe he has Van Ginkle. He's actually expressed like kind of surprising confidence in Van Ginkle coming back.
Yes, and so has his wife. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, because
but not so much confidence on Connor Williams.
No, that has not been the case. But we're going to start here.
I wonder if there's an agent, you know, client thing happening between those two. Like, you know, it would explain some things.
Yeah, but we're going to start here. We kind of know what we're going to do with Xavien Howard's money. It's probably going to go to draftees. And maybe somebody like Connor Williams, who's a late signee in June. But that does leave a hole. And no matter what you thought of how good or bad Xavien Howard was, he was actually very, very good until he got injured toward the end of the season. I would say the last month and a week, he was not the same player he was the first 11 weeks of the season. But that's going to leave a hole, and that's something that they're going to have to replace. They're going to have to replace a boundary corner guy on the outside. How do you reasonably go about, and if you want to talk a little bit about Xavien Howard and what he meant to this franchise for 8 years, you could go into that as well. But how do you reasonably begin to start replacing him? Because I think they're going to have to dive into the free agency market and look for some versatile competition for Cam Smith and Kader Kohou. And I think that's a start. Your thoughts, Simon?
I mean, it's got to start with Cam Smith, mate. I mean, he was the guy that was drafted to be the full-time, long-term replacement for Xavien Howard. We never saw him on the field, but he's got to be that guy. And look, you know, we talk about diving into the free agency pool and doing this and doing that. I think Dolphins fans have really got to temper their expectations in terms of the sorts of guys we're going to be signing in free agency. We are not flush with cash. These deals were not deals to allow us to spend mega bucks. These were deals to allow us to get close to actually getting under the salary cap in and of itself. You know, if we come out of, you know, free agency and we've signed, you know, Arthur Millett and, you know, Demetrius Flanagan Fowles and Kevin Givens, then I don't think people are going to absolutely melt down. But I think this is the bin that we're shopping in at the moment. You know, this window, unfortunately, because of finances and, you know, high-priced free agent deals or trade deals with Tyreek and with Jalen and et cetera, I don't think we're going to be, you know, I saw somebody the other day saying on social media we should be signing L'Jarius Sneed. And you just think, in what world? Where do you think we're getting the cash from?
In a world where there's no salary cap.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, The guys, you know, you look at corners, and we've talked about it. We did a free agency primer on OnlyFins, and I talked about guys like Emmanuel Mosley, who was in Detroit, who that they will know from San Francisco, who we've obviously brought over the Detroit Lions secondary coach, Emmanuel Mosley, obviously, Keller Witherspoon, sorry, who was at the Rams, but again, another guy that the team will know. I talked about Millett. Chris, you talked about some guys as well in terms of, you know, Kendall Fuller would be amazing, and, you know, Sean Murphy Bunting, you know, really good player. But you know, it's
but those
just,
but those were the expensive guys, and absolutely. I don't expect us to be playing in that pool either. So
absolutely, I mean,
if I told you Xavier Howard was going to cost, I forget how much was that, 18.5 million this season or more. But let's say you could get Kenny Moore for $9 million a season. That's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Well, except that Kenny Moore is a pure slot. You know, Kenny Moore's not going to play outside. Kenny Moore's a slot corner. So, you know, what do you then do with Kader Kohou, who I would assume you would move back to the slot? You know, so I love Kenny Moore. He's a great player, but I just don't think that's a viable proposition in terms of what you're looking to do. As for Xavier Howard, I was just thinking the other day, you know, in terms of, and what an incredible servant he's been, what a great player. And I was just trying to think of a better second round pick that we've had historically, and I'm just sat here now going down the list of, you know, better player than Chris Chambers, I think.
Was Sertan a second round pick?
Sertan, I think, 1998. Who's the better corner, Sertan or Howard?
Howard. I got Howard number two all time behind Sam Madison. Oh, I got Sertan number three, by the way.
Interesting, because I think Sertan was a better corner than Madison. I think Madison had better numbers.
Yeah, but I weigh the 8 years here better than, what was it, 5 years for Sertan here?
I mean, those three cornerbacks, Sertan, what was, Madison was a second rounder as well, wasn't he? Howard, Sertan, and Madison, all second rounders. I'm not sure. Keith Sims?
Three-time Pro Bowler, Keith Sims. That's pretty good service.
Jarvis Williams was a good player. John Offerdahl. 86. Offerdahl was a pretty decent player, wasn't he? I mean, I'm not sure he's better than those three.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I mean, you're going back at Mark Duper, 1982.
Yeah. He's the all-time leading receiver. So, yeah.
I mean, there you go. That's how good a second-round pick Xavier Howard was. He's arguably the best player we drafted in the second round since 1982. You know. I mean, that's a pretty big indictment on his talents and his ability, and you know, just the way the ball attracted to him in terms of picks and big plays, and you know, some of the injuries down the stretch hurt him, but hell of a player.
Well, you know, Xavier Howard also taught me some lessons just in terms of draft evaluation and the corners, because sometimes I think we get a little antsy about draft prospect corners that are a little bit, you know, a little bit on the handsy side, a little bit on the physical handsy side. And Xavier was that, you know, at coming out of college, coming out of Baylor. And I think, you know, maybe some of the better corners in the NFL, the ones that you see week in and week out that are really getting the job done the best, are physical. I mean, they use their hands and they know how to do it. They know how to get away with it. They know how to, you know, if as long as it's not something that they have to do because they don't have the athleticism, then that's then it's really it's kind of flipped for me. It's like, you know, he's too handsy. That's a bad thing. To, you know, hey, he's physical. That's a good thing. And I think that Xavier Howard really highlighted that for me personally.
Yeah, I remember watching him. I remember watching him out of Baylor, and I kept thinking, man, he's not quick footed. You know, like he's not as twitchy as you expect a guy that highly touted to be, but man, did he look different when he got here? You know, he looked faster. He has an interesting stat, by the way. He's played in two playoff games. He has an interception in each in his career. You know, but his injuries toward the end of his career made him a little bit less reliable.
Well, there's also an age thing. I mean, the corners don't really last. People know that running backs don't, like, I mean, now I think the age thing with the running backs is somehow getting even shorter. It used to be 30 and forget about it for running backs. Well, now it seems like it's getting shorter. But the history with corners past 30 is not good. You know, it's a real thing for that position.
Chris, explain to the listeners, I know the answer, but so you could explain it a little bit better than I can. We have a lot of them, and I've had some on the Twitter account ask us, he's going to be valuable to somebody somewhere. Why can't you salvage a fifth round pick for Xavier Howard?
You mean instead of cutting him?
Yes.
Well, I think the issue is going to be the leverage with any sort of attempted trade is everybody knows that Miami is up against it. They started off, before the salary cap came in and just blew everybody out of the water as far as how big it came. Thank you, Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. I think the Dolphins ended up starting off something like $34 million over the salary cap. And they have some things that they need to do this offseason. They have players they need to re-sign. They have a Christian Wilkins to think about. And now there's talk about they're going to franchise tag him or maybe franchise tag him if they can't come to an agreement on a contract, because no matter what, they're not letting him escape, you know? Miami needs the room to do this, and there's only so many places where you can find that room. You know, this is mm-hmm. not, there's not an infinite number of contracts that you can edit and restructure and things that you can do in order to get some space under the salary cap. And so every team talking to us about Xavier Howard would know that we cannot afford to keep him. And so there's zero leverage on the Miami side. The only leverage that you would have is the teams competing against each other. And then that means that Xavier himself comes into play as far as what his leverage is and why does he even need to be cooperative over this whole thing, you know, mm-hmm. because all you're doing is putting a collar on his neck and limiting his market by having everything go through you as the team. And, you know, especially now that we know that the Dolphins themselves don't have any leverage. So it's just, you know, leverage of the Buccaneers bidding against, you know, the Rams or just, or the Texans or something like that, you know, just two random teams. You know, so I think that Xavier wouldn't be expected to really cooperate with that and play ball with edits on his existing contract in order to make that happen with a new team. And ultimately speaking, I don't think anybody is going to give him the same contract that he had with the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is the way it had to go.
I think he's going to be pretty attractive to Dallas. Dallas, Stephon Gilmore's not going to return. He's 34 years old. I think they'll continue with those one-year contracts opposite of Deron Bland. And they're going to have a predominantly man defense next season with
Houston
Zimmer.
Would be the place that I think is an interesting landing spot for him as well.
You say
yeah, it's home. Yeah, Houston's home.
Yeah,
I think he might give the home discount a little bit there.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good spot. It's a good spot to go there or Dallas, you know. That star in your helmet, you know, it's always a big deal to everybody. You know, he is from Houston. I don't know if growing up he was a Cowboys fan and he looked at the Cowboys any differently, or he doesn't care. You know, he's always liked his money. So maybe that's going to decide one way or the other. Simon, who's next? Because some have speculated Jerome Baker could be on the way out. I'm speculating that Jerome Baker is going to get an extension, and that's how they're going to deal with his money. But who do you think could be the next sacrifice on this team?
It wouldn't surprise me if it was Teron Armstead, I've got to say. Although I also wouldn't be surprised if Armstead didn't announce that he wasn't retiring. I mean, Baker's interesting because Jerome Baker's only 27.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like he's been around for a long time, and he won't be 28 until almost the end of the season. Christmas Day, in fact, he'll be 28. You know, there's still plenty in the tank. He's still a fundamentally sound, fundamentally good football player. We looked a different, i.e. worse team when he got injured down the stretch. He makes all the calls. He's a three down player. You know, is he Roquan Smith? No, but he is. You can win Super Bowls with Jerome Baker. Unequivocally, you can. And I wouldn't be too keen necessarily just to, you know, to throw that away. I mean, I think the interesting name for me will be Armstead. I think there's a significant cash saving to be made if he's cut after June 1st. Beyond that, it's difficult to see particularly where you think those names are going to, you know, in terms of guys that are on the roster and high price guys at that. You know, it won't be Chubb, it won't be Long. You know, and then beyond that, who are we looking at? Mike White, maybe. I mean, is there a massive saving there? Jeff Wilson, you know, beyond that, I don't really see any names that, you know, you can't get rid of. You know, Zach Seeler's just signed a new contract. You know, Austin Jackson's just signed a new contract. So I don't really see huge savings to be made anywhere. I think there might be some restructures in the pipeline. Jalen Ramsey, Tyreek Hill, for example. And then you've got the kind of the looming issue of, you know, Jalen Waddle.
Yeah, and I think,
Tua.
and by the way, I think you mentioned one, Zach Seeler. He just signed a contract.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was
I
just
think
looking at the
he'll.
list.
I think he can restructure, and I'll tell you why. Drew Rosenhaus kind of mentioned, there was a way. I guess he's trying to convert some of his bonuses or some of his salary into cash, but he says there's a way they can find $4.5 million with. With Zach Seeler, I'm not sure how that is, but Drew Rosenhaus mentioned it, which kind of means that he's putting it out in the pipeline.
It's pretty easy. It's pretty easy with Zach Seeler. He does have a base salary of $8 million, and so anything that you and it's funny that Drew is really nail on the head, hitting the nail on the head, the exact amount of restructure value that's actually there in Zach Seeler's contract. Like over the cap, for example, has about $4.7 million worth of potential restructure savings if they restructure the contract. What you have to think of, though, is a lot of people take these restructures and they really keep it all in the conversation of the player. And then they, and then they talk about, how hard it'll be to cut the player afterwards and stuff like that. What you have to realize that with these restructures is every contract of any size that the team has, any base salary of any size that the team has, is essentially just functioning as a doorway to the bank. It's not having to do with the player himself. All you really need to know is that this player is going to be on your team this coming year. That's it. You don't need to know that he's going to be on this team beyond this year to do a restructure job. What you need to know is that he's going to be on the team this year, that there's not going to be any reason that you're going to want to have gotten rid of him this year. So if you're confident that a guy is going to be here this year, Zach Seeler is going to be here this year.
Yeah.
Then you use, then it's like having a credit card in your wallet. And each credit card that you have in your wallet gives you access to your overall debt level. Like your debt is your debt. I mean, so just the extra plastic in your card just gives you more access to that debt. And so that's what you have to think of with these restructures. That's why it's like, should we restructure Tyreek? Should we restructure Jalen? They're gonna use whatever they need from a pure debt standpoint, because this is a debt model. You're taking out debt against your future salary caps. And they're going to use whatever they need. And the NFL, you're absolutely incentivized to do this. I was tweeting about it earlier today. Not to get into really complicated economic concepts, but there's no interest rate for the debt when it comes to taking debt out against your future salary caps. And there is inflation. So everybody's dead cap and, quote unquote, dead cap that they had walking into this year got 14% cheaper because the salary cap raised from 224.8 million to 255.4 million. So your debt is always getting smaller because of that, because the salary cap keeps rising. So that's why teams are like, I'm going to borrow against future salary caps. This is what we do. If you don't do that, you're at a competitive disadvantage, a significant one, a significant one. You are playing with one hand tied behind your back, and it's not going to be some situation where, they're going to regret that someday, and I'm going to be the one who wins. No, no, you're just going to keep losing. So I think that to keep that in mind with which contracts they restructure, who doesn't even really matter. It doesn't. The how much is what matters. The how much debt they take.
Baker's on the docket for 14.8 million this year, but he converted 3 million of his 2022 base salary into a signing bonus, and they've therefore added 2 void years. I don't think he'll play on that 14.874 million contract this year, I think they'll do something to that. The other guy that Chris has mentioned a couple of times, actually, and I was just looking at his numbers. I mean, he's due $4 million this year, I think, and that's Jason Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's due $4.5 million this year, $4.7 million next year, and $4.3 million the year after. You know, that is a significant amount of money for a kicker.
You know what I was also thinking about? You know, where's the savings with Thurm Smythe? Did they train up Julian Hill enough to take over Smythe's spot if they draft a tight end?
Yeah, Smythe's an interesting one. I just
but only for $1.5 million. Well, no, yeah, I mean, that's not fair. He is. You're right, Simon. I'll get lectured on this one. He is owed $3.5 million. Of fresh money this year.
Who's that?
Durham Smythe.
Oh yeah. He is. Yeah.
So maybe, but I don't see it. I think he's too important to the program.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
So you guys don't see Julian Hill stepping into his role with a draftee?
I don't think he showed that he's ready to.
Okay. All right, last thing before we go to break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little combine. Last thing before we go to break, there's a little bravado now coming from Dolphins headquarters on Christian Wilkins. I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know how they're going to do this. But it's, you know, it's been reported by Dan Graziano that they do not plan to let him go anywhere. Your thoughts on this, Simon? Because I don't believe it. Like, I don't see how it's going to happen, but evidently they're going to try.
I mean, they want to keep good football players. I thought it was instructive and intriguing that he was at the Dolphins cancer cycling event the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Given that he's a free agent, he's no longer a, you know.
So was Cedric Wilson, and that was
Cedric Wilson. Yep.
That one, you know.
You know, I think you can chalk this one up, Alf, directly to the salary cap beat. I mean, the salary cap was supposed to be, teams were projecting, the reports were that they were projecting between 242 and 245 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it came in at over 255. And that's, you know, that's not an insignificant beat. And I think that it just provides enough breathing room that it could change concrete plans for the Dolphins. And they'll be saying, you know, listen, if we were about to lose Christian Wilkins because of a few pinched pennies in the discussion, then we're not going to do that anymore. You know, and I think that really changed it. So, you know, again, thank Taylor Swift for that one. And I when I thought about it too, you don't want to mess with, I've seen too much tape of the chemistry between Christian Wilkins and Zach Sealer, and we got a really great glimpse of it on Hard Knocks. But it really shows up on tape. There's such chemistry between the two of those guys that you know, you could argue that if you keep the two of them together, you're making sure that Zach Sealer is worth every penny of his own contract and then some. And so, you know, if you take the two of them together and what they're going to make, you know, maybe that makes it a little bit more palatable to
them. All right. And we're going to go to break. And when you come back, we're going to talk a little combine. And we're going to talk a little testing. Keller Williams, by the way, not throwing for anybody ever. Next time you see him throw a pass will be in preseason. So that was in earlier today. But first, these words. Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so Premier Kitchen, Bath, and Laundry Cabinetry
Countertops and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at WCUFL.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 five-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
And we're back. Well, Combine's up this week, going Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You can check for who's running and testing when on the NFL website. They have a very detailed prospect list and drill list, and at what times. All of it will be televised. Simon, this is the time of year where everybody starts looking at all of these drills and, oh my God, this offensive tackle from somewhere ran a 4.9. My God. Which drills do you care about? And you can elaborate on which positions, because personally, all three cone stuff for defensive ends and edges, I care about. 40-yard dash times, I only really care about running backs and wide receivers and cornerbacks. That's it. Everybody else, like, who cares? You know? Like, why do I care that an offensive lineman ran a 40-yard dash in 4.9?
Yeah, I care about things the kind of the minutiae. You know, I care about the 10-yard splits for offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. I care about, you know, I do care about the 40 in so much as it's just a sexy event to see. But also, you know, I care that a lot of these things justify what I've seen on tape. Or if they don't, then it makes me go back and recheck them. You know, somebody that looks like a, so I'm doing the draft guide, and yesterday I was looking at Jared Wiley from TCU, who's a transfer from Texas. Okay. And, you know, he's 6'6", 253 pounds, built, looks like he's built in a lab. Okay. But every clip I saw of him with the ball in his hands, he just looks like a plodder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if he turns around and runs a 4.55, it's going to make me want to go back and look again and think to myself, what am I, you know, is this a stride thing? Is he's just got a longer stride and I'm not really taking that into account? It's those sorts of things. You know, I'm intrigued by this wide receiver group, and, you know, for multiple reasons, it's a phenomenal group. But when I look at, you know, I look at these receivers, you look at Marvin Harrison, who, you know, claims he's going to run in the 4.3s when he does finally run. I know he's not performing here, but, you know, you look at Roma Dunze, he's arguably my favorite player in the entire draft, 10.67, 100 meters. You know, Malik Nabers, 10.71, 100 meters. You know, you go through this list of players and you look at...
Oh, wait, very quickly, Malik Nabers is the favorite for best 40 time in...
Yeah, I mean...
In the combine. Does he do it? Yes or no?
No.
Okay.
There are some...
No, I don't believe so either.
Okay.
You know, Ladd McConkey's run a 10.75, 100 meters. You know, Troy Franklin has run a 10.65, 100 meters. He was he's a state 200 meter champion. Roman Wilson, state 100 meter champion, run a 10.76. Jalen McMillan is a 10.67, 100 meter runner. You know, this receiver group is unbelievably quick.
Yes.
You know, and it goes right down the board. You know, I'm just scrolling down and looking at these guys and trying to see their 100 meter times. You know, Xavier Worthy ran a 10.55 in high school.
You know, the other Xavier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these guys are, you know, Jamari Thrash ran an 11.02 100 meters in high school. You know, these are, Taj Washington was a 4x100 meter state champion, triple, three-time 4x100 meter state champion, who ran the final leg. I mean, these guys are absolute flying machines. I mean, there are some seriously quick players in this draft, and I don't think it will be the guy that you mentioned, but I wouldn't surprise me if one of the receivers. But Brendan Rice, Jerry Rice's kid, ran a 10.77 100 meters. So, you know, there's some absolute speed demons in this class.
Chris, what do you care about? Or better yet, what do you don't care about?
I think, honestly, I can't isolate just like a particular thing and say that I care about this and I don't care about this other thing, because what you're doing is you're adding pieces of information to what we should all always, you know, keep in mind and be able to admit is our own imperfect information about these prospects. We don't, you know, we don't necessarily have the time to do 3-4 full games of every single of the 300 prospects or whatever that play or that will be drafted, not will be drafted, but will draft it or sign as priority free agents. And so you're looking for added pieces of the of information, and some information there's reason to, you know, kind of doubt it, or downplay its value for reasons. Other information is very valuable because it might be that last piece of the puzzle that you were looking for with this player. I'm glad that Simon mentioned, you know, when it comes to a guy who runs faster than you expected, you know, you go back and watch the tape and hey, is the power or is the problem, sorry, that he's a long strider and maybe I wasn't seeing it or something like that. And I think that's such an important point to make because guys don't run faster than they are. That's kind of a myth. Like what you run is what you were able to run, right? That if you can't say that a guy ran a 4.2, but he's not capable of running a 4.2. Clearly he was capable of running a 4.2 because he did run a 4.2. What you can say is that maybe it doesn't show up on film the way you might otherwise want it to because of this reason or that. And that could be because he's a long strider or because perhaps your visual cues are off because he's a little bigger than you're thinking or some reason, right? Or maybe you just watch games where he's, you know, he's playing against competition that are all 4.3s and 4.4s and you didn't realize that, you know? You thought that he was playing against slow players and so you kind of discounted it or something like that. It adds information to the puzzle. I think sometimes I want to say the shuttle and cone stuff is something that I will generally give a positive mark for when you run something really good, but I won't necessarily turn around and give you a big negative when you run something not good. And there are specific reasons for that. I think that those particular drills are pretty esoteric as far as how you have to run them, the technique that goes into it and stuff like that. And so once you enter into all this technique stuff and it's like, well, what are you really measuring? Are you measuring really how agile this player is, or are you just measuring how good they are at running that, you know, very weird drill? You know, it's a weird set of movements if you really break it down. So you try not to place any too much emphasis on any one thing to where you're seriously dinging these guys for bad times. I think it's just, you know, you pick and choose based on your own judgment where it's appropriate to say, okay, well, this actually added something to the picture. And this other thing, I don't feel like this added anything to the picture because, you know, and as long as you know the answer to that because, then I think you're okay, because this is all just an opinion game anyway.
Yeah, on offensive linemen, I've always really cared about, you know, how many times they can throw up 225, because not that I want to see how strong they are just because they can push 225 26 times, but if you lift well at the combine, it suggests to me that you do. And I want my offensive linemen to be, you know, I don't want them necessarily to be, you know, cardio junkies, but I want them in the gym pushing weight as much as possible. I want them in the gym. Okay. I want them lifting. And usually when a guy lifts well, it suggests a good work ethic in the gym. We'll start right there, and we're going to work our way down to a couple of these positions, because on Thursday we're going to get in the weeds with actual prospects. But offensive lineman, Simon, I always really cared about that. Your thoughts on what you're looking for, because I think they're testing on Sunday. So what are you looking for offensive linemen?
10-yard split, arm length, you know, especially for tackles. You know, the intriguing one will be Troy Fatanu, who apparently, according to Jim Nagy, measured, senior bowl scouts measured him at 34.5-inch arms, which is, you know, significantly longer than we thought. And if that's the case, then, you know, I mean, sign me up anyway, but really sign me up. Obviously, the movement skills, how they move their feet, those lineman drills, I think, are very important. You know, but I'm not, again, I'm not overthinking it. I'm not, it's a piece of the puzzle. You know, it is not the puzzle. You know, I'm not going to allow something that I see on tape at the combine to overshadow something that I've seen in 4 or 5. You know, some of these guys, you know, I try and watch 3 games of everybody, as many as I can, the 300 or so prospects that will go in the guide. And that, you know, that's over, that's live in inverted commas or off tape games, but also then, you know, it's very easy to be able to find entire games of a certain team on offense or on defense in terms of every snap of the offensive or defensive side of the ball. And, you know, I'm going to watch in detail 3 of those, but guys that I think the Dolphins are going to be significantly interested in who are going to fall into that Dolphin area. So, you know, a wide receiver, that might be a Brian Thomas. Offensive line, that might be a Jordan Morgan and a Fatanu and a Powers Johnson. Tight end, it might be Bowers. You know, defensive backs, you know, you're looking at kind of Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid McKinstry, you know, those kind of edge guys, Verse, Latu, et cetera, Adisa Isaac. So I'll try and watch 5, 6 games of those guys just because I just have a better handle on it. But again, I don't want to change significantly anything that I've seen in 4, 5, 6 games in compared to a 15-second drill that somebody does at the scouting combine where they look fantastic. Yes, it's a part of the puzzle. Yes, it's intriguing. But no, I'm not going to all of a sudden jump somebody up 2 rounds because they look great in shorts when they look average in 6 games that I've seen them against all sorts of competition on tape. That's just not going to happen. I think that's a mistake that some people fall into. Probably fell into it myself. Chris, you've probably done the same way back in the day, but you kind of learn to understand how these things work. And, you know, especially with social media these days, people can get jacked up. And but I just, you know, projections are projections for a reason. And they're why we love the draft so much, because, you know, we'll all have, you pick a player, we'll all have slightly different opinions. A lot of players will have 1 or 2 different round opinions on where they might fall. But ultimately, I think we're all going to know that we're not going to use the combine as this kind of great measuring stick to think, well, this person is amazing now because they, you know, they ran a 4.29 when I thought they were going to run a 4.45 or whatever. It's a piece of the puzzle. And it's the same with offensive linemen, same with corners, Chris, and the same with receivers, whatever. To me, it's just a piece of the puzzle.
Chris?
Yeah, it's an important. It can be it's only an important piece of the puzzle when there's a, as I said, a specific, and it always has to be kind of a specific reason that it is a piece of an important piece of the puzzle to you. And I think that offensive linemen can be kind of a good example too, because I would love to look in theory at the 10-yard splits. If I felt like they were always clean, but there's, you know, there's the combine does this weird thing and continues to do it, and where the clock doesn't really start until the player starts. And so what that means is like the guy who is deciding when to start the clock, you know, that decision, you know, whether he did it, 0.03 seconds early or 0.03 seconds late. You know, especially even though they do it on, they calibrate it on video and such, it's important. It ends up being like real important if you're trying to parse these 10-yard splits, you know, which kind of get crunched up to one another. And so it's hard to even, in theory, it's a very valuable, you know, measurement, but in practice, it can present its own problems. But for an offensive lineman, you never get the chance. You usually don't get to see them out on the hoof on the football field, right? And so I think sometimes we just have to kind of admit our own shortcomings when it comes to judging speed on film. I know we would all like to think that we are great at this, and we're also talented at judging speed on film, and you know, oh well, what's on the tape is what's on the tape, and it's like, yeah, but the people that are watching the tape have a lot to do with saying what's on the tape and what's not on the tape. You know, I would say, I've said this before, if you think you're really good at it, then do yourself a favor and play yourself a video of the guys running a 40-yard dash. Crop the screen so that you can't see the results at the bottom, and mute the audio so that they don't, so that you don't hear what they ran. And and then just watch them one by one, and jot down what you think they ran. Or if you don't feel like doing that, you know, I'll settle for just ordering them, like which you think was fastest, and then second fastest, and then seventh fastest, and then eighth fastest. You will have embarrassingly bad estimates of what these guys ran. That's how bad it can be sometimes when we're trying to judge the speed on tape. And so when somebody says, hey, what's on the tape is what's on the tape, you know, it's like you have to keep that in mind, that we're not perfect at this. And then when it comes to like arm strength and things like velocity on the ball, try doing the same thing except at a 3x scale on the speed department, because the ball goes three times faster than the players do in the 40. So I think that we have to keep that in mind. That's why these measurements exist. That's why they help us. But you know, you have to make judgment, and it's not easy. It's not meant to be easy, about how I want to incorporate what this measurement just did to my evaluation. And no, you don't want to, you know, like, I'm not starting from scratch because of what he ran at the combine. That's not supposed to be the thing. But it is going to give me some perspective, and you got to accept the perspective when there's reason to believe that it's valuable.
Bit of breaking news: the Jets have released Laken Tomlinson, who started 114 straight games at guard, and obviously was a fairly significant piece of Mike McDaniel's run game when he was at the 49ers.
That would be an interesting pickup. Although he was, you know, if you hear Jet fans talk about it, they say he was bad. I'm gonna have to dig in a little bit deeper, but that would be an interesting ad.
Well, you know, it doesn't matter unless we lose Robert Hunt, but right. But you know, we might.
Yeah,
we don't know what his contract demands are.
Yeah, no, that Hunt contract is gonna be one of the more interesting negotiations in ages, because at what point do you fall back on he's a guard, you know?
Yeah, right.
Once you start getting the 14, 15 million a year, you start thinking about, this is not Quentin Nelson. This is a guy that we really, really like, you know? But this is not Quentin Nelson. He's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. Yeah, no, I'm not buying this. Moving on to pass catchers, Simon, it really has to be the tape, right? Because these 40 times and watching them run around in their underwear catching passes is just made for TV. But those 40 times are going to be confirmation for our biases that we already built watching tape. I understand that it's Kent State, but I saw Brock Bowers take a end around 75 yards for a touchdown in a college football game. I don't care who it was against. It's against Kent State. Yeah, who cares? 75 yards, a tight end. He's going to blaze a 4-5 flat or something like that at the combine. And I think that could move him outside of reach for somebody like Miami at 21. So,
but will it though? Because, you know, I don't think anybody's coming into the combine thinking that Brock Bowers is anything other than a guy who's got great top end speed for somebody at 6'4", 240 pounds to create explosive plays. I mean, we've seen him for 3 years do exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest surprise would be to me that if he didn't run a 4.5, so I don't expect his 40 time to change his draft position. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Do you, Chris? I don't. I don't see that as a.
You know
yeah,
what?
The... I mean, it's sort of like, and this gets back to like, does the guy run or does he not run? Because what does he have to gain? What does he have to lose? And you know, in this case, I think you're right. Brock Bowers potentially more to lose than to gain. He'll do it anyway, I'm sure. But yeah, I think yes, you would be expecting that. I just always caution with that position that we're in the midst of some kind of thing happening, both at the running back position and in the tight end position, where, you know, the position values are fizzling in terms of how much teams are willing to allocate to it. And I think that they're in a bit of free fall. And so, you know, Brock Bowers for a lot of people is a slam dunk top 10 pick, right? And has been for a while. And they've been talking about that for a long time. And I've always kind of cautioned, you know, he might be in a little bit more in Miami's range of 21 than you might have expected. And that's just a position value thing. And so I think that that's, you know, that's something to pay attention to. People say, I was like, oh, Kyle Pitts, you know, he went, you know, as high as he went, number four, I believe. And it's like, yeah, but I don't think that's working out too good. You know, and if you look at the first round tight ends, it's been tough. It's been a tough history. And I think teams are taking account of it. I think they're throwing up their hands a little bit and they're saying, well, then fine. You know, we're just not going to use premium assets on this.
Yeah. Simon, this time of year brings back my favorite next gen stats, their score breakdowns. I got a question for you since we're talking tight ends. Last 5 years, which tight end got the best athleticism score from Next Gen Stats?
God knows. I mean, probably Pitts.
Nope.
No, it's probably Noah Fant.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
It's not?
No, you ready?
Okay.
You ready for this
Go
one?
Ahead.
At 6'6", 247 pounds, Mike Gesicki out of Penn State. Ran a 4.54 40-yard dash, a 41.5-inch vertical, and pushed 225 22 times.
That's he was you know, he had
he went in the second round. Testing. So yeah, Simon's right, I think.
I just looked it up because, you know, I look at the relative athletic score. It's been a nice shortcut, and Mike Gesicki did indeed have a 9.97. RAS and Noah Fant had a 9.88. And so yeah, Mike Gesicki edged him out there. But you know, Gesicki's issue, the reason ultimately why he isn't still in Miami, I still insist on this to this day, it's not necessarily the blocking. I know that certainly didn't help, but I don't think anybody ever watched the film in Chris Greer's office or whatever and said, you know, hey, we can fix him as a blocker. I don't think that was ever really gonna happen. I don't think Mike McDaniel's foolish enough for that. I don't think John Embry is foolish enough for that. But the reason they franchise tagged him and paid him and, you know, tested it out to see if he worked was because they wanted to see if he was compatible with with Miami's passing game. And he's not. Because he is that long strider. He's that long strider, rebounding jumper. And in this offense, that's not exactly what they're going for.
Yeah, well, that's why that's what tape is king this time of the year. Even if they blow away the combine this weekend, tape is king. Well, we're going to call it right here. And on Thursday when we come back, we're going to be combine intensive. We're going to get into some individual athletes to watch on these 4 days. I'll be glued to the TV as everybody else will, especially these wide receivers. Like, this is as good. It keeps getting better and better every year. I guess we could go out on this best unit group we're gonna see this weekend. I think it's a runaway, the wide receivers. Your thoughts, Simon, and then we could get out of here.
Yeah, it's definitely wide receivers. And actually, the point that you made just a minute ago about times and Bowers, to me, actually the important people to look for in the combine are players like, you know, Jalen Polk at Washington, who I have a first round grade on, Keon Coleman at Florida State, Ladd McConkey at Georgia, guys that are on the periphery of the first, Troy Franklin, Roman Wilson, you know, guys that are sort of on the periphery of the top 50, Ricky Pearsall, Malachi Corley. These are the interesting guys that I think, you know, some teams might take a chance on. You know, Andy Reid, is Andy Reid going to see a, you know, an Adonai Mitchell or an Xavier Worthy or a, you know, a Troy Franklin or a Pearsall or a McConkey or, a, you know, one of these guys at the back end of round one and think, you know what, I can pair them. They're a field stretcher. They ran a 4.35. It kind of confirmed what I saw on tape. And I can pair them with a Rashee Rice and, you know, the guys that I've got on offense and, you know, we can make something happen, you know, with this Chiefs offense. Guys that you just think might sneak into the back end of the first round or early second round portion who might be in the sort of the 50, the 45 region at the moment, who then just absolutely blaze a trail at the combine. Those to me are the guys that are really, you know, I don't need to see Roma Dunze run a 4.36, which he probably will end up. I don't need to see Malik Nabers do it. But for those guys that are sort of sniffing around that sort of 25 to 55 area, that's where you could really make yourself a little bit of money if you run well and you perform well. That isn't jumping people up massively just because of what they do on the at the combine. That's confirming what you've seen on tape and then just ticking those final boxes that, you know, they're not the elite athletes like a Harrison, like a Terrion Arnold is going to be, like a Bowers is going to be. They're in that second tier, but they just elevate themselves a little bit more because of what they did at the combine. That's the interesting thing for me, I think.
All right. I think we could get out of here on this. On Thursday, we're going to do a lot of combine talk. We'll talk about a lot of these prospects in depth. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.